Hello, and welcome to Family Health and Wellness podcast series for parents and professionals working with families. Family Wellness Tips. Family Health and Wellness is a part of the National Extension System, which provides research-based information and is a program of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Suffolk County. I'm Rory McNish, the host of this series, which will showcase family health and wellness educators who are experts in the field of nutrition, health, and diabetes management. Our goal is to help adults make research-informed decisions for themselves and their families. I'm pleased to welcome registered dietitian Christina Toscano, who will be joining us today to talk about what you need to know if you or a loved one has been recently diagnosed with diabetes. Christina is a diabetes educator with Family Health and Wellness and specializes in helping people with diabetes manage their disease and live healthy lifestyles. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for having me on today. I'm looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, and I'm glad to have you on because this is a very important topic. I have diabetes in my family, and I have to be careful myself. So give me an idea. Tell me, what is diabetes?
Sure. So simply put, diabetes is when your blood sugar is too high. There are a few main types. There's type 1, type 2, gestational diabetes. And then, of course, we've got pre-diabetes.
Okay.
Now, type 1 is when someone produces very little or no insulin at all. Insulin is a hormone needed to regulate the amount of glucose or sugar in the blood. Okay. It often begins in childhood or early adulthood, although it can begin at other points in life as well. It can't be prevented. Now we go on to type 2. Type 2 is the more common form of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
It's when your body is not able to use the insulin that it produces effectively. It's usually diagnosed in adulthood, although recently more and more children are being diagnosed. It can often be prevented or delayed.
Okay.
Now we have pre-diabetes, is higher than normal blood sugar, but it's not quite high enough for a diagnosis of diabetes. When someone has pre-diabetes, it can still mean that damage is occurring, but diabetes is not inevitable. Luckily, lifestyle changes can help prevent a person from getting diabetes often.
Okay.
And then finally, we have gestational diabetes, which is when a woman is diagnosed with diabetes for the first time in pregnancy. It can affect both mother and baby's health, but if it's controlled, it's possible to have a healthy pregnancy still.
I've never heard of that. Gestational, yeah.
So surprising, it's actually quite common in that nearly 10% of pregnancies in the U.S. are affected by gestational diabetes, according to the American Diabetes Association.
Wow. Now, who is at risk for diabetes?
Sure. So there are many risk factors for diabetes. It can be anyone with a family history of diabetes. People of certain ethnicities are actually at a higher risk for diabetes. So that would be people who are African American, Hispanic, mm-hmm. American Indian, Pacific Islander, and Asian Americans. Those with obesity are at a higher risk with a history of gestational diabetes. So if you've had gestational diabetes before, you're more likely to have diabetes later in life. Certain medications can increase your risk for diabetes, having high blood pressure, high cholesterol, insulin resistance. So when you add all of that up, that's a pretty big portion of our population, which is why I think that it's so important that people learn more and more about diabetes.
Absolutely. And so if I get diagnosed with diabetes, does my whole life, have to change?
Luckily, no, you can still live a happy, healthy, and even long life. Mm-hmm. You can eat many of the foods that you enjoy and still do the activities that you love. You just need to keep your diabetes controlled.
Okay.
If it's not controlled, there can be many complications, anything from cardiovascular disease, nerve, kidney, eye, foot damage, and increased risk for infection. Now, the good news is you can control diabetes through nutrition, exercise, taking medication as prescribed,
right,
monitoring your blood sugar, and keeping up with your appointments, not just your regular doctor appointments, but also eye doctor and podiatrist or foot doctor as well.
Now, how would I know if my diabetes is controlled?
So one quick way to find out is getting an A1C test, which is often done in a lab, although sometimes doctor's offices offer it as well. Mm-hmm. Now, an A1C is a lab measure that can give you an idea of if your blood sugar has been controlled over the past 3 months. It's really similar to basically an average of your blood sugar over 3 months.
Okay.
An A1C of 7 or below is considered controlled diabetes. But because it's an average, it's actually possible to have an A1C of 7 or below, which is controlled, and not have well-controlled diabetes. So if you had an A1C of 7, that's an average blood glucose of about 154. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think about it, since it's an average, that right. could mean that your blood sugar has been maybe 130 to 170, or it could be as big a range as 54 to 258.
Wow, that's up there.
These extreme highs and lows are much tougher on the body than staying in control. So A1C doesn't give you the full picture. It gives you it's a great starting point and a very important measure. But it's also really important to measure your blood sugar on your own at home. That way you know if your sugar is controlled day to day.
Now, how would I check my blood sugar at home?
So if you've been diagnosed with diabetes, chances are your doctor has already prescribed you a glucometer. That's mm-hmm. the small machine that you use to check your sugar from home. It tells you what your blood sugar is at that exact moment. Think of it as a snapshot. Your blood sugar changes throughout the day, so many times a doctor will have you checking multiple times a day until your numbers are in control. Your doctor will let you know how often to check your sugar at home.
What if I hate needles?
So luckily, we live in a time when scientists have been able to make the needles very, very thin. Mm-hmm. Also, you can actually choose how deep you want the needle to go. Mm-hmm. So go with the smallest length that allows you to still get a very small drop of blood. Most people start with a 3 and go from there. So if you're at a 3 and you're not breaking any skin, you might need a 4. If you're at a 3 and you do feel too much of a pinch, you can try a 2.
Okay.
So that way you can adjust it to your own needs.
And so that means you get that little drop of blood and then that goes on the meter, right?
Right. So okay. It goes on a strip that you'll get as well with the meter, a testing strip.
Okay. And then that plugs into that device and then that yep. will read what your blood sugar is.
Exactly.
Okay. Now do I have to check it every day? Is that something that you really need to do?
So that's individualized. Sometimes your doctor may have you check it every few days or every other day if you're well controlled. Sometimes you may need to check it multiple times a day. So it's important to find that out from your provider. But remember, the whole purpose of the glucometer, of that machine, is that it's to help you. Mm-hmm. It helps you. You can use it to see how your body reacts to different meals. That way you can make changes later on. Also, sometimes you might have very low or high blood sugar and not know. So the glucometer is the key to knowing if you need to make any changes and to control your sugar.
So I checked my blood sugar, but I have no idea what these numbers mean.
So a typical goal for your blood sugar is 80 to 130 before eating or less than 180 after eating. However, your doctor might give you specific goals that are just a little bit different because every body is different and it needs to be individualized for the person.
Okay. Now, do I really need to check that every day?
So sometimes your doctor may have you checking every few days, every other day. The frequency depends on the person. And sometimes it might be multiple times a day. The reason is that it's a tool for you. It helps you to see and learn how your body reacts to different meals so you can make changes later on. Also, sometimes it's possible to have very low or very high blood sugar and have no idea. By checking regularly, it'll give you the tools you need to control your sugar.
So like more information, the better.
Exactly.
Now, what are the common symptoms of low blood sugar? And what would I do if my blood sugar gets too low?
So the common symptoms of low blood sugar or hypoglycemia is the word for it, would be shaking, sweating, mm-hmm. rapid heartbeat. So your heart beating very quickly, headache, hunger, weakness, fatigue, feeling anxious, irritable, or dizzy. Some people feel many of these. Some people might only feel one, and some people might feel normal, which is why checking regularly is so important.
Right.
Now to answer the next part of your question, if your blood sugar gets too low, you want to follow the 15-15 rule. So too low would be below 70. If your sugar is below 70, you want to consume 15 grams of rapid acting carbohydrates. So what that means is you would want to drink a cup of juice or soda or have 4 glucose tablets. 15 minutes later, check your sugar again. If it's still going below 70, if it hasn't risen enough, you want to do that again. Have another cup of juice or another 4 glucose tablets.
Okay.
If it does begin to rise above 70, then you would have a snack. That way it doesn't just crash right over again, all okay. over again. And then finally, the last step, which is just as important, is to figure out the cause of why it went so low. Did you skip a meal? Maybe you didn't eat enough during your last meal. Mm-hmm. Are you taking too much insulin? Speak with your doctor if your sugar is going low often.
All right. So then what are the common symptoms of high blood sugar? And then what do I do, you know, if my blood sugar gets too high?
So common symptoms are nausea, drowsiness, blurry vision, dry skin, hunger, extreme thirst, frequent urination. Again, you might have some of these, you might have one of these, you might have none of these. So checking regularly is very important. If you find that your sugar is too high, to lower it, what you want to do is drink a big glass of water and go for a walk if you're feeling up to it. If your sugar is over 250 for 2 days or more, call your provider. And it's important when you first get diagnosed with diabetes to speak with your provider about when to go to the emergency room. So the number might be different for different people, okay. but sometimes if your sugar is too high, you might need medication right away.
What kind of medications should I be taking, if any?
So that actually changes based on the type of diabetes, what your numbers are, et cetera. But there are oral medications, which are taken by mouth, and there are injected medications, which you would inject into different parts of your body. Your doctor may give you one or both of those types of medications. Your job would be to just find out the names, dosages, and how each medication you're prescribed works. Some medicines need to be taken a certain amount of time before or with a meal. So just make sure you know that information. If you feel like you're experiencing side effects, let your doctor know right away. And just note, it can be very dangerous to skip medicine once you've started. So if you have any doubts or questions, rather than just skipping for a few days or stopping the medicine, talk to your provider and they can help you find out an alternative.
Okay. Now let's get on to one of my favorite subjects, food. Now, would I need to stop eating like all kinds of pasta, bread, you know, if I have diabetes?
So no. The good news is pretty much every food has a place in a balanced diet.
Right. What can I eat then?
A good way that I like to kind of go into talking about food is to talk about separating food into different food groups and understanding how each food group affects your sugar. And that way you can use that information to learn how to balance each plate effectively. So bread and pasta are both part of the carbohydrate group. What carbohydrates do when you eat them is they actually turn into glucose, they turn into sugar, and they raise your blood sugar. It's right. okay to eat carbohydrates, but you want to keep that portion down to just a quarter of your plate. Some examples of carbohydrates would be rice, pasta, cereal, bread, oatmeal, and then even potatoes, corn, peas, and fruit. When you eat a carbohydrate, the good news is that if you eat it together with protein, fiber, and fat, all of those things will slow how fast you absorb the carbohydrate, which means it'll raise your blood sugar a lot slower and allow it to drop slower as well. Okay. Meaning your sugar won't go quite as high. It'll stay more in the normal range for longer. So it's always a good idea if you're going to have a carbohydrate that you pair it with one of those other foods.
Cool.
So talking about protein, if you're having a quarter plate of carbohydrates, you want to pair that with a quarter plate of protein. So that would be your fish, meat, eggs, low-fat cheese, and even nuts and seeds. They work very well together. And then the other half of your plate, since we have a quarter plate carbs, a quarter plate protein, the other half would actually be vegetables. I'm sure I'm not the first person to mention that vegetables are good for you.
No, not at all.
But from a diabetes perspective, they are full of fiber, and fiber helps slow the absorption of carbohydrates. So if you eat half a plate of fiber, of vegetables, a quarter plate of protein, and a quarter plate of carbs, you'll have a balanced plate. Some other foods that have fiber in them would be whole grains and fruit. So when you're choosing your carbohydrate, if you're able to choose brown rice, whole wheat bread, that's always a better option. And then for fruit, eating a piece of fruit is much better than drinking the juice, because when you drink the juice, that's just the sugary part and the vitamins. It doesn't have any fiber. Okay. So if you're craving something sweet, you might want to have half of a piece of fruit together with a little bit of protein. And that's much better than just the juice. Finally, fats are the other component that we talked about, which slows the absorption of carbohydrates. So you just want to pick a healthy one to have with your meal. Some examples would be avocado, nuts and seeds, olive oil, and even fish. What you do want to avoid if you have diabetes or limit very much would be juice, soda, and sweets. So if I had just one tip to share about nutrition and diabetes, I would just say make sure every time you have a carbohydrate that you have a protein with it. And also make sure you don't skip any meals. Consistent meal times are very important with diabetes, especially if you're on insulin.
Okay, good advice. Now, what about snacks?
Sure. So again, it would be pairing a starch or a carbohydrate with a protein. So some examples could be a half of a fruit, a half of an apple, for example, with a low-fat cheese stick, or a half of a peach with a handful of almonds, a serving of crackers with tuna salad. In every case there, I'm pairing a little bit of a carb with a little bit of a protein to balance things out. Also, snacks don't have to be something that you get from a bag. They can be leftovers. They could be a smaller amount of what you had for lunch or what you had for dinner the night before.
Wow, that's a lot of information. That's awesome. Now, if I wanted to learn more about it, and I'm really, I'm thinking, I may even have diabetes. Where can I get more information?
Sure. So Cornell Cooperative Extension actually offers evidence-based classes, and we also share blogs and resources, which you can find on our website, which is ccesuffolk.org/family-health-and-wellness. Or you can even just go to our Facebook page, search CCE Suffolk County Family Health and Wellness, or at CCE Suffolk FHW. If you're going to be researching online, just be very careful with where your information is coming from. So .org or .edu is usually more credible than a .com. The American Diabetes Association is simply diabetes.org. And finally, use the professionals in your area. Speak with your doctor. Find a diabetes educator. If you have questions about food, find a registered dietitian who specializes in diabetes, and they can all help as well.
This is amazing information. Thank you so much, Christine.
Thank you.
There's so much like diabetes in my family that, this is, I really have to keep a heads up on this. So, all right, well, that's about it. So thank you for listening to our podcast on newly diagnosed with diabetes. Now what? We would love to hear your comments about today's topic. You can email us at jsj79@cornell.edu or Christina directly at cft36@cornell.edu. And as Christina already mentioned, you can get more information on this topic by visiting our website at ccesuffolk.org/family-health-and-wellness. Thanks again.